We just want you to register to vote. And the guy said, well, I don't like your politics, but you're real nice people. And I thought that was a lovely moment, because that to me was that rare moment where they weren't able to characterize us as evil or the devil or out to get them.
Hello, this is the Great Battlefield Podcast. I'm Nathaniel G. Perlman. A great political battle is being fought right now between progressives and the forces of reaction on the other side. This show is about the political entrepreneurs and other progressive leaders who are finding new or improved ways to fight. In this episode, I talked to Linda Woolard, the Democratic Party's organizer of the decade in Louisiana. Linda, a former art gallery owner who came into political organizing through the Obama campaign in 2008, has become an organizer's organizer since that time. She's now working through the state party to re-elect the Democratic governor this year. We had a very good conversation about organizing in her state and politics in Louisiana more generally. So with that as background, a quick word from our sponsor, then my interview with Linda Woolard.
This episode is brought to you by Graphicacy. Graphicacy is an analytic design firm that can help you advance the mission of your organization using your own real data and information. They are 21st century visual communicators who create interactive graphics, motion graphics, and data visualizations. You can find Graphicacy at graphicacy.com. That is GRAPHICACY.com. With Graphicacy's help, you can visualize a better world.
Hi, Linda.
Well, hi.
Would you mind introducing yourself and giving me a quick biography?
Sure. I came to politics very late in life. I live in New Orleans, so I came in after Katrina and the flooding here of 2005, when it became really clear to all of us that we had to rebuild our community on our own afterwards. But it later became clear to me that we needed an ally in the White House. So I became early in 2007 involved in the Barack Obama campaign and have just stayed involved ever since. I got involved in sort of the grassroots organizing aspect of that campaign. I really love organizing. I think it's important, and we need more people in Louisiana who know how to organize. So that's been what I've continued to do. So I've done that with Obama. I did that until his reelection in 2012, then worked for the Louisiana Democratic Party for 3 years until our current governor, Democratic Governor John Bel Edwards, was elected. Then I was going to go on and do other things, but I ended up working on Hillary Clinton's campaign in 2016 in the state. And after that, I've worked with some of the resistance efforts, some of the efforts to save healthcare, some statewide legislative efforts organizing. And this year, I've returned to the state party to help Governor Edwards get reelected.
Like many people who are successful in this field, are pretty modest about how you characterize your biography, but maybe we can go through that a little bit and,
okay.
And understand what these positions were and
okay.
And kind of get your background, and then we'll talk maybe a little bit about 2019 and,
okay.
and 2020. What were you doing before Katrina?
I was an artist,
yeah.
And I had a gallery.
What kind of artist?
A folk artist, uh-huh. Simple art. And I had a gallery here where about a dozen local artists used to show,
mm-hmm.
Which was a lot of fun, a lot of work.
A lot of art in the city.
There's a lot of art in the city.
Yeah.
You know, having a gallery, I was actually going to close it anyway before Katrina hit, because I found keeping a gallery and doing the work that I did was a bit onerous. There is a thriving sort of festival community of artists that go from art festival or music festival event to event, and I felt like that would be a better place to go, but never really got the chance to do that. The hurricane hit the city,
yeah.
And the thing I ended up doing the first year after was cleaning up other people's artwork with a restorative gallery here. And then again, Obama kicked in.
Right. What was the job you had with Obama, or was it sort of self led.
I'm sure you know this very well. They had mybarackobama.com, or Mybo, as we lovingly called it. Before I had any contact with the campaign, I had just engaged through Mybo and started, they kind of coached you on how to host events. You could post them on the website.
It was their social networking tool.
Social networking tool. You could post blog posts. I loved it. I miss it. I wish we still had something like that. And I've asked for it repeatedly. Probably people are tired of hearing from me about it. So I just started engaging that way. And I guess Chicago, where their main office was, had noticed a few of us in Louisiana being very active and contacted a handful of us and asked us if we'd be field representatives, which was a non-paying job.
Yeah.
I worked for free as a volunteer for them for the first few years.
What kind of impact do you think you had doing that?
I think huge impact. Now, of course, the state didn't go for Barack Obama, but it did help us create a network of people who were doing this grassroots organizing. And because I eventually met people who were already strong Democrats and working with the Democratic Party, we were kind of able to combine our efforts. And whereas I might not have understood the Democratic process before, and big D, Democratic process, before being engaged with Obama, I was able to get some mentors and learn a little bit more about how the Democratic process in Louisiana works. So I feel like we were really able to organize a lot more Democrats in the state.
It's funny how previous campaigns, they leave some kind of structure behind,
sure,
right?
Sure.
And so you see people who were brought in from this cycle or the next cycle or re-educated or cultivate themselves as leaders is quite interesting.
For sure. One of my main mentors had done what I was doing for Obama, had done that for John Kerry. There were a lot of people we connected with who had worked on the Howard Dean campaign. So you're right. There was sort of a trail of people who had come on with their candidate, but who had stayed engaged. And I feel like Obama really brought a lot more people in.
Inspired a lot of people, and a lot of people wanted to work for him.
But I think the difference was there was that community organizing aspect that maybe had not been quite as prevalent here in any case.
Yeah.
There are community organizers here. They just may not be Democratic organizers. So while there have been people doing that work for a really long time, they may not have been doing it with the party.
Right. What did you learn about organizing through those bunch of years working with the Obama organization?
So many wonderful things. First thing I learned of great importance to me that remains really important is just how valuable volunteers are and how they really need to be treated with great respect, worth their weight in gold. I think sometimes that they're not given their due. And if you're an organizer, that's your life's blood. I mean, you don't get your goals met. You don't get voter contacts made if you don't have good volunteers who are willing to do that work for you.
So it's like recruiting and nurturing a volunteer class, sort of, is what you've learned from that.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, look, those of us who are organizers here, we talk amongst ourselves, of course, and there's still not enough of us. But we have volunteers who will follow us from campaign to campaign. And that was one of the top notes of the Obama campaign, is that the volunteer may come in for the candidate, but they stay because of you. You're the person who's going to bring them back.
Your journey then took you to the state party.
Yes.
Right. And what was your role with the state party?
I was an organizer for them as well. And I mean, I think of the term organizer as a very noble term. Mm-hmm. So people ask me what my occupation is or if I sign my tax returns. I sign organizer no matter what my job title is, because I think it's that powerful of a role. So I went to organize with the state party, and we helped develop the Team Blue Dat program, which was basically taking the ideas that I took from the Obama campaign to a state level. So we developed a team of people who we made phone calls during legislative session asking people, would they call their legislator and support issues that we needed to support. We were often the first time they had ever heard from the Democratic Party, the volunteers coming in with Team Blue Dat, and we'd make the phone calls. And, you know, in Louisiana, We have a lot of people registered as Democrats who don't vote Democratic. So one of the things we wanted to do was reach out to Democratic voters and ask them three questions. Do you support health care for all? Do you support equal pay for equal work? And do you support raising the minimum wage? We don't even have a state minimum wage, but people understand the shorthand, I think. So we could identify if people supported those three issues, if they were going to vote Democratic, if they were going to vote with us.
If you had to characterize the Democratic Party in the state when you came in and now, how is it? Is it strong? Is it together?
We're rebuilding it for this year. It kind of ebbs and flows given, you know, we don't get a lot of national money on years. As a red state, we don't get a lot of national money on years where we don't have big elections going on. So this year may be a little different. Last year for...
You have the odd year election here. The
right.
2019 coming up.
All our legislative races and our governor's race and our big state races are...
So there'll be a lot of attention here.
Yes.
Because not many, there's only a few states.
Correct. There's five or less, I think, that have big things going on. So last year was not a big year for us. Mm-hmm. That said, I mean, when I came in, we had a new state party chair. So she was taking it into a new direction. Karen Carter-Peterson was taking the state party into a new direction at that point anyway. So we were able to build from the ground up. We put a whole like digital team together where we had a rapid response, you know, social media team of volunteers, letter writing campaigns, letter to the editor. We had all kinds of different things that we built off of the idea of community organizing from Obama, but really kind of built it out into different areas.
How is the state chair?
She's great. Yeah. I love her. Yeah. She's a very powerful, powerful politician, very skilled.
What do you think of the characteristics that make a good state party chair?
What I like about what she's done is she's really brought the state party into a modern state party. I certainly think there's more that we could be doing with the state party, and I'm eager to do that this year because I think you need an organizer. I think you need an organizer on board to do the things that I think are important, and they haven't had one for the last couple of years. You know, she's very powerful in the way that she expresses the Democratic views for the people of our state. She's a very progressive person, which is far more progressive than some areas of the state. But I think it's important for our state party chair to be a strong Democrat, to be a progressive Democrat, to be able to lay out the argument of what Democratic values are, even if that is a little bit further left than some of the people in the state.
What do you think are the characteristics of a great organizer?
I think you have to be a little OCD.
a lot of attention to detail.
A lot of attention to detail. It's almost a 24/7 job. You have to be very aggressive just to kind of never let it go.
What do you like about it?
I like being able to see progress. I like being able to see building coalitions and getting people behind an idea to work towards that idea. I like being able to, I mean, it's evident. If you can get enough people to support something and do the work of making the progress, you can see it happen. So I like that. Even not state level, we did this at a state level, but all the states did for the fight to save healthcare, fight to save Obamacare in 2017. That was huge. Just rallying the troops to stand up for something we believed in made a difference. I mean, I wish we'd had that much support when we were trying to pass healthcare.
Sometimes you don't know what you've got till it's gone or going away.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I also think people have learned more since 2010. Mm-hmm. That was always a deep struggle, getting Obama elected. And we had so many people coming into the offices and so many people invested in seeing him elected. And he told us then that it wasn't about just getting him elected, that we'd all have to keep working. But when we turned around to try to pass healthcare reform, the number of people in the office was 10 versus 500. That was interesting. It was a little frustrating, but I think people are starting to understand now the vast amount of people power that's required to make progress.
When you look at the state and sort of the competition between the red team and the blue team, or however you want to think about it, how do you see that balance of power? What are the strengths of each side and how do we stack up?
It's still a red state. There's no question of that. We have to work smarter and harder. And I think people power is our strength. If people understand what Democratic values are, big D, Democratic values and what our goals are, I think more people would support what we're trying to do. As far as the Republicans in the state go, they certainly have more money. They certainly have more of the media on their side. I don't mean the local media, but certainly people are...
The big corporate media.
People are listening more to the right-wing media in our state. Mm-hmm. That makes it difficult. One of my favorite stories, and actually someone just requested this story, we tell the story again at a training we were doing. One of my favorite stories was when we were registering voters during the first Obama campaign, and we were going door to door. It was a very mixed area as far as Republican, Democrat. And we found a gentleman out working on, had to be 80 years old, working on his pickup truck out front of his house. And we asked him if he was registered to vote. And he said, no. And we're like, well, you know, it's an important election. We need you to register to vote. And we were wearing our Obama t-shirts because you can do that in Louisiana. The guy said, well, I would register because it is an important election, but you're supporting the wrong guy. And we told him, that's okay. We'll still register you to vote. We want everyone to vote. That's important. We want everyone to vote. I was like, well, I don't trust you. I think you're not going to give them my form if I register with you. He said, let's fill it out. We'll give it to you. You put your stamp on it and send it in. We won't be the middleman. We just want you to register to vote. And the guy said, well, I don't like your politics, but you're real nice people. And I thought that was a lovely moment because that to me was that rare moment where they weren't able to characterize us as evil or the devil or out to get them, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was coming through the airport on the way here, and my 16-year-old daughter spotted someone with a Trump hat and a Trump t-shirt, and she was like, this is the other. She was appalled. Like, she lives in the D.C. There's no Trump supporters that we ever run into. But I'm trying to tell her, like, these are people. These are neighbors. Their lens on the world is a little different than ours, but you can't write these people off. And that's part of the almost the agony of politics right now is how divided we are. And
it's
how,
a struggle.
Yeah. And the other struggle. Side is hearing this enormously different version of history and events.
Right.
On Fox and all of the other places they get their news and talk radio and so on.
And if we're not interacting, we never get that moment where the person says to you, you're real nice people.
Wow, they're not actually like wearing horns or something like
right.
that. Yeah.
Right. It's a struggle because, I mean, there is a knee-jerk reaction, even from me. I mean, my parents are Republicans. They supported Trump. They voted for Trump.
Yeah.
That's difficult. My sister and I are both Democrats. My parents don't understand how we ended up as Democrats. And I'm like, well, you raised us to be Democrats, in my opinion.
Right.
The values you raised me with are Democratic values. You have to be able to talk to people. You have to be able to talk to people and let them know that you're not evil and you're not out to get them. You're actually there to help them.
Tell me about the governor's race that elected John Bel Edwards against Vitter, right?
Yes, yeah. That was it. So we have jungle primaries here in Louisiana. So he had...
Everybody runs regardless of party in the same...
So until the last month, he had several Republican opponents.
Yeah.
We were able to make sure he was the only Democratic candidate running, which again, that's a...
Clear the field.
That's a good state party chair. she was able to keep the field cleared. And I know...
Although sometimes that pisses off a lot of people, depending on who you keep out.
Sure.
Yeah. But you want to win. And that's the job of the state party chair.
That's right. And I mean, I know there are multiple stories about what happened through that year, but I do just know firsthand for a fact that she kept the field cleared. So we had one Democratic candidate. A runoff is just 1 month. So we ended up with Vitter versus Edwards in that last month. He ran a great campaign. He ran for 3 years. He put it out there 3 years early that he was running for this job. I am an eternal optimist. So whether that impacted my support or not, I don't know. But I immediately thought, okay, I'm behind this guy and he can win.
What do you think of him as a governor?
I think he's a great governor. He has very high approval ratings. He's doing what he can do. He's governing this state as it should be governed for the people of the state, in other words.
He's a few positions that are out of the mainstream of the Democratic Party, right? Which sort of help.
Out of the mainstream of the national Democratic.
But not out of, so pro-life, right?
Yeah, that's a sticking point for some of our progressives, for sure.
Of course. If you can't get a Democratic governor, except for this a rare individual that can find their way through, then you have to make some compromises sometimes, right?
Louisiana is an incredibly pro-life state. There may be room for movement on that, but it's not from a governor. Advocacy groups in the state would have the ability, for instance, possibly to do some polling or information to move the needle, to find out like what kind of language or where we could change what we're fighting for, where we could get more people along with us. I think there's space for movement, but the governor has to govern the state as it is. And this is the state as it is. Right now, I hear people all the time say, well, I'm pro-life, but I don't think the government should dictate what people do. Right. And I would like to tell them they're pro-choice, but you can't tell someone who self-identifies as pro-life that they're pro-choice. You can't. I just feel like there's other work to be done by us at ground level.
So tell me what you see coming in 2019 and what your role in that's going to be.
So again, I'm organizing, but we're calling it mobilization now. So
sounds good.
It's really all about getting out our voters, making sure we have enough voters, making sure that we've got our coalitions together, making sure they all feel connected to the work and all heard. So we're doing the early work right now.
Who makes up that coalition when you're talking about Louisiana?
So we've got Democratic groups. We've got women's Democratic groups. We certainly want to reach out to the African-American communities. We've got a lot of Vietnamese voters, so the AAPI community statewide. I mean, they're often not really reached out to. There are people we want to reach out to. We've got LGBT groups. There's a vast range of constituencies. This governor has been good for all of them. We just want to make sure that they feel connected to the work we're doing early on.
In 2018, there were a number of governors of blue states who were very popular Republicans who cruised to re-elections in Massachusetts and Maryland. It's kind of a similar situation, I think, to have a popular Democratic governor of a red state here. Mm-hmm. And what you tend to see in those off-year elections is if someone has done a good job and they have met with approval, they can usually do very well. Does that feel like what you have coming, or does it seem like it's going to be a tough fight?
Well, I don't like to take anything for granted.
Yeah.
I'm not a negative campaigner. I'm really just an organizer, right? So what I'm looking for is building consensus and getting the coalitions and just making sure we're turning out our voters. I don't know if it'll be a tough fight or not. I just know that we can work hard and make it easier for us.
The harder you work early, you're going to get the things in
right.
order.
So we want to do that early work of getting our coalition together, making sure people who are going to vote know they have to come vote for us. I worked last year on a criminal justice reform issue.
Amendment 2 or whatever
yes.
it was?
Yes.
Yes.
So previously in Louisiana, you could have been convicted to life in prison with no chance of parole by a non-unanimous jury.
Which is really unusual. Oregon and...
We were the only state where you could be convicted to life with no possibility of parole. Oregon does have the ability of convicting you for a felony with a non-unanimous jury still. So we passed that. But, you know, one of the things that I found with the groups, the coalition that was working on that particular criminal justice reform, was a lot of them, obviously, they're working with formerly incarcerated people who aren't reached out to enough. And there are other groups who work with low propensity voters or people who are non-voters. One of the things that I want to work on this year is making sure that those groups are reaching out to those folks and making sure they vote. There's only so much the party can do. We can certainly build a bigger coalition and make sure that if we're all working together towards a goal, we can just turn out more voters. If we're getting more people to the polls, I think more people voting is always better for democracy, small d.
I spoke with Wes Bias earlier.
Okay.
He said that you won some award as like Democrat of the Decade.
Organizer of the Decade.
That's not a bad thing for an organizer to win, right?
It's a great thing. Now, again, I'll stipulate that was from the Louisiana Democratic Party. So, yes, there are organizers out there who have been doing this longer and harder than I have. But I appreciated that they recognized the work I'm doing and that I love the work. But one of the things that I want to use 2019 for, too, a lot of times in our state, if you're really good at something like organizing, you're going to go to a different state for a Senate race or go to work on a presidential campaign.
Do you have any urge to do that?
I don't, but I mean, like, again, I started much older than most folks do, and I already owned a house, and I, you know, have a...
You're rooted.
I'm rooted. Yeah. I have a whole zoo of pets, you know, it's not really something I can pick up and move. But what I'd like to see come out of 2019, because we are going to have the ability to have offices across the state and hire organizers across the state, is that we do train up people who are going to be good at organizing, who will stay in Louisiana.
Yeah.
And that's what I'd like to see, is us really building a culture of folks who know how to do this work and are good at it and who want to do it here because they want to see Louisiana do better.
The state legislature here, is there a chance to move it substantially in a progressive direction, or what do you think is going to happen?
Well, I certainly think we want to get more Democratic legislators elected. It's important, obviously, at this point, because the census is coming up and we're talking about redistricting. That makes the governor very important because he can veto the lines that they draw. But having some extra support for him in the legislature, he goes in front of the legislature every year talking about equal pay, minimum wage. No governor has done that before. But we need more support for him. So we would certainly like to get more Democrats elected. I think there are some flippable districts that we can look at. I think there are a lot more people looking at it now. So I know you're going to talk to Emerge, and there are a few other groups who are really working on trying to identify where we can make some inroads.
You mentioned kind of in your biographical statement or whatever that you'd work with some resistance type organizations. Mm-hmm. What were those and what did you do?
So in 2017, again, I had thought I was going to keep trying to retire. I thought I was going to take 2017 off after the presidential election, but then what happened.
What was your role for Hillary in 2016?
I was the state director for Hillary.
So that was a tough one to be right in the middle of.
It was. And we were a single staff state.
But not a state that was really targeted.
No. It was heavy lifting.
It was lonely.
It was heavy lifting. It was not lonely. I had great volunteers. And we had a hopping office here.
What percentage did she carry in the state?
I don't remember. I mean, she
did. Less than 40, yeah, unfortunately.
Probably, yeah. That's probably right. Yeah. But I don't remember. She did great in the primary here. She was a heavy favorite in the primary in all but two or three parishes, I think. No, but
so then afterwards, you're thinking of retiring. You're beat up a little bit, I assume. But you found some activities to get involved in.
Well, so what happened early on is that there were all these great new groups that came out, like the Indivisibles, and there were Blue Acadiana, a lot of just groups across the state that sprung up. And what I just started witnessing that was difficult to witness was that they were new enough and we were in a volatile environment enough that it seemed like they might just need a little help with figuring out how to do rallies or, you know, legally.
They might need an old pro around. Well, right?
You know, and I don't want to give myself, you know, too much credit, but I identified that there might be a place for them to need to get a little information they didn't have. So we initially hosted, and again, the state party, because I've kept a really good relationship with them, I said, you know, do you mind if I, you know, use your infrastructure to host some resistance calls, conference calls? And so what I would do was every week for the first 10 months of the year, every week we'd host, I think it was every Wednesday, a resistance call. And I would invite the leadership. We had about 90 different groups across the state. Maybe about half of them got on the calls initially. But I didn't just invite the leadership to get on and say, you know, whatever you're planning, you can share it with the rest of the groups throughout the state. But also, if you need a little help figuring out how to make it go right, we'll have some professional people on to kind of try to help walk you through that.
Was there any resentment of someone trying to take a leadership role, or did that work smoothly?
So I just want to be clear. I wasn't trying to take a leadership role.
You're trying to facilitate their
leadership.
Being successful from the ground up.
Yeah. I was trying to facilitate their leadership.
Yeah.
So I would get people on who, you know, from SEIU, or there's a group here, Step Up Louisiana, who is a newish group, but who came from other groups like Fight for 15, who've just been doing all the things they wanted to do, these new groups wanted to do, been doing them for years. So even stuff I didn't know, I was learning from these people that I'd get on to talk about how to mount resistance, really. I think it was very beneficial early on.
A lot of those groups really exist outside of the party, or
fancy
that they are. I think they're part of the same coalition, I think. But people see the world very differently. Do you think you'll be able to pull them into the efforts of the state party to reelect the governor, to increase this the representation in the legislature? Or
my goal is never to co-opt someone who's doing their own thing, right? And I think they, for the most part, will vote with us.
Yep.
Not every time, but most times. And that's enough. I hope that they will be helpful this year in achieving the goals we need, because I think their goals are our goals this year. But I don't need them to do the work of the Democratic Party. In fact, like I was saying before, I would like them to do the work the Democratic Party can't do.
What does that mean?
So resources are a thing, right? I'm never going to have enough organizers on the ground to talk to every single voter or potential voter. So if I have a group who can go register voters who we might not be able to reach, I would love for them to go do that. That's still helpful. If they'll then take the next step of making sure they turn out those voters they register for the election, that's going to help us. I think more voters means better small d democracy. And I think that tends to favor Democrats, big D. I mean, that's why I'm a Democrat, right? I mean, I'm not here to push anything other than what I think is best for the country and best for the vast majority of the people.
How do you think the politics of these groups and their connection to voters plays out with a Democratic primary for president that's coming to sweep through in 2020? What candidates that are declared or thinking about running do you think connect with the political culture here well?
You know, again, all those 90 different groups on the resistance calls in 2017, I think many of them would have very different answers from the others.
When you're looking at the candidates, if you're thinking about a candidate that can do well in the primary, carry the primary here, who do you think is positioned to do that and why?
I don't know that I know the answer to that yet. I'm personally still looking at
candidates. You're looking for your own.
I have a favorite.
Do you? Who is that?
I'm more than happy to say I like the message Cory Booker brings to the debate. Mm-hmm. And I think it's an important message for the country to hear
more
right
about
now.
Healing.
Yes.
In a post-Trump era, we may need that kind of message.
I mean, look, when I met Cory Booker in 2012, which because he came down for our big annual fundraising dinner for the state party that year, I told him then when he ran for president, I wanted to work for him. He gave a speech then about he's here because of a conspiracy of love. And he talked about the family and the neighborhood and the, you know, the community that raised him up to be the person he is. So that's my entrance to that person, right?
Yeah.
I just think that's a really important message for us to be hearing. Whether or not he comes away with the nomination, I think it's a really important message. So I'm going to be interested in lifting that up. I also am going to be interested in making sure that whoever wins the Democratic nomination wins the presidency, because we have to.
And they're all so much better than the rogue in chief.
So my message to people who might not like who the nominee ends up being, is that there are other candidates you can work for. We've still got to get the Senate back. We've got to keep the House. Even if people hated our nominee so much that we didn't get the presidency, let's please get the Senate and the House. I mean, at least the damage that is done can be at least mitigated by making sure we have Congress. So don't give up on organizing and fighting for Democratic candidates.
Because you didn't get your first place choice.
Yes.
Yeah. It's going to be quite a sorting process to figure out who wins that. Very unpredictable.
I think there's some lovely candidates, though, that I'm interested in many of them. I didn't answer your question, but I hesitate to speak for the groups. You know, we have Democratic Socialists here. We have Our Revolution here. I suspect they're going to support Bernie, but I don't know that. But we have a lot of women's groups, so I think they're going to support some of these great women candidates. Kamala Harris already has a lot of support here. I just see that on social media. There are people that are already lining up behind her. I think Elizabeth Warren has some support as well.
Yep. And you don't know whether somebody who isn't as talked about as much as the top tier as they think about it won't come out and do really well. So
I think once we start seeing the debates, I remember thinking in 2015, listening to the Democratic debates at that point, I was like, our debates were so different than the Republican debates.
Yes, they were.
We talked about the issues. They were substantive. They were interesting. We weren't
just
battling.
Insulting each other.
Yeah. I was like, I'll take any of those people over any of the people in the Republican debates. I just hope that our voters will reflect more on that as they're watching.
There's active campaigns. There was a headline today in the newspaper about foreign-led interference online with our elections, people smearing our top candidates, people spreading disinformation to muddy the waters on our side. Does that reach Louisiana? Do you see that, the results of that at all at this stage?
We might. I mean, it'd be hard to know. I mean, certainly we're all on Twitter. We're all on Facebook. When we get those things, for sure, that's gravely worrying to me because I don't feel like we're doing anything about it. I mean, I don't think
there's some groups working on it, but it's a tough problem, and it's insidious, and it's worked for the Russians and across Eastern Europe and elsewhere. So
what I can say is that in 2014, when we were working on the Mary Landrieu campaign, we certainly had from our own country people come in, like the James O'Keefe type folks come in and try to cause trouble here. And I certainly anticipate that we're revisited by that this year.
Yeah, that's kind of part of the game of politics, unfortunately. Is there a question I should have asked you that I failed to?
I love this question when you ask people. I can't really think of anything.
Well, it's been a great honor to talk to you. Anything else you want to say?
Well, I love your podcast, and I'm very happy to have learned about it and to meet the NGP behind NGP Van. That's for a campaign nerd. That's a great honor, frankly. So,
well, there's a whole lot of people behind that company.
I'm sure.
And I've been out for quite a while. Just like you don't want to take too much credit for organizing. I don't want to take, but I did get one of the balls rolling back in 1997.
Well, so thank you for that, because it's still mighty in our world. So, there's so much great new technology coming along that's adding on to NGP Van. Yep. And it's very exciting to me, the different things we're having available, being made available. And just the great minds that are working behind finding better ways.
I've been working really hard to interview a bunch of the leaders of those tech firms, among other things. And I'm really impressed by the level of new talent and new ideas and different angles on things that exists right now. And I'm really rooting for it to make a difference.
It makes organizing so much more fun.
Yep. So thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
That was Linda Woolard, organizer for Democrats in Louisiana. I look forward to seeing how we do in the off-year election that they're having this fall. I'm glad Linda will be there in the fight. This is Nathaniel G. Perlman with the Great Battlefield Podcast. You can find us at resistancedashboard.com or by searching for Great Battlefield in places where podcasts are found.